If anybody has a miss of one, was looking at that great big long poem between the second and third readings. I omitted it because it's rotten poetry. It's a big thing by Thomas Aquinas, and he was a good philosopher, but a lousy poet. And basically what you get is a theological tractate set to questionable verse. So don't be disturbed if you miss something. Google it if you feel the need to. Okay, today's Corpus Christi. A feast fraught with all kinds of problems, I believe. I'd like to start out by saying there are two aspects of this that are absolutely central, and we really seriously lost sight of them. One is nourishment, and the other is transformation. And actually, you can collapse them into the same thing. Just anybody who is nourished by anything is transformed by that nourishment. You cannot not be transformed if you are genuinely nourished in your heart at the deepest part of your lives. So as I said, it's pretty much the same. And the reason I emphasize nourishment is that we have been so hung up, not thanks to Thomas Aquinas, but thanks largely to the Protestant Reform, on the objectivity of the Eucharist, the thinghood of the Eucharist, this holy thing, out there someplace, where my connection with it is that merely of a passive spectator. And that's rubbish. That's why nourishment is an exchange between the nourisher and the nourished. You can't have one without the other. So it is absolutely important to be aware of that in the context of the Eucharist, because as I said, we have really denatured the Eucharist to a very large extent, and I still think ghosts of all that stuff is hanging around certainly in the back of my head, and maybe yours as well. We have this holy thing, you can't bite the host, the nuns told us, you know, it'll bleed all over your mouth. I mean, this kind of junk, you know, which we were brought up on. That's the truth. No, it's not the truth. It's some stupid attempt to make sense of something and do it badly. So, again, to go back to the business of nourishment. So Jesus chose the two most common elements in human life, food and drink. You know? But what I'd like to propose, and this too is completely lost in this notion of the thinghood of the Eucharist, is that that presence of Jesus under those signs is merely an anticipation of our relationship with the whole world. You know? Again, to go back to the business of nourishment, what nourishes me? I've been dogging myself with that question all week. Friends, art, especially African art, music, without which I probably would die or dry up even more than I already have. The weather, like today, nature. There are all sorts of things that nourish us. And what I'm getting at is that we, to be transformed, is to be able to recognize the divine presence in all of these phenomena. All of these phenomena. God is present. God is present. If we have eyes to see, and of course this is the problem, because our eyesight has just been diverted by this objectification of the Eucharist. So, no, it's just this holy thing, this bread and this wine. Bread and wine, Jesus was fairly canny, I think. He took these two things, part of our world, and said, listen, this is infused with the presence of God. You know? And not in an exclusive way, but rather in an introductory way, if you will. So that I become sensitized to that presence in everything and everybody. So the Eucharist is central, as it must be. But is it an entree into a larger appropriation of the world? And that, I think, opens up all kinds of things. I mean, the ecological movement, which I've never seen anybody address in terms of the Eucharist, ought to be fed by this. It is central to the ecological movement. If the earth is not sacred, then what in God's name are we worried about the fact that all the polar bears are going to die and the elephants are getting shot at extraordinary rates and blah, blah, blah. We're deforesting the planet and losing species every day, all kinds of species every day, because of the predations of human activity, human greed, primarily. You see, the history of this stuff is very complicated. I mean, if any of you know that famous book by Max Weber, The Protestant Ethic, you know, I mean, that's a good analysis of how we came simply to look at the world not as our garden to be tended by us, but as our playpen, to be used simply for entertainment purposes, at whatever cost. Even if the end result of all that entertainment is going to be the bleakness of the desert. You know? So this is, it certainly has proven to me to be, because I've not converted to that point of view, but I think that is the authentic way of looking at the Eucharist, nourishment, transformation. You can't go to a great play and not be transformed. Nobody walks out of Death of a Salesman or Hamlet the same person they were as they went in. Nobody hears the Mahler Second Symphony or whatever your composer of choice is without somehow being nudged a little bit closer to the truth and the good and the beautiful. And you see, the connection, I think, is absolutely intimate between the Eucharist as this entree to this larger way of viewing the world. And so I wish in the church, well, we'll see what Francis does with this encyclical on the environment, which is already drawing fire. What does he know about the environment? He's a jerk, you know. I think you can talk to us. I mean, we got that forest to cut down, you know. We got that mine to dig. You know, we got all these things. We got that pipe to lay. In the name, of course, of largely profiteering. So we will see. We will see what he says. I hope we are not in communication, let me assure you. But I hope he picks up some of this notion of the connection between the Eucharist and the ecological movement. We got it. This strikes me as weird. We have to have a movement to save the world we live in. Doesn't that sound strange to you? Oh. In other words, I can summarize this whole business. I've been listening to a bunch of lectures on the poetry of that great English 19th century poet, Gerard Manley Hopkins. Anybody know Hopkins? Okay, he is a big deal. He's a bigger deal now than he was when he was alive. He died at the end of the 19th century, I think. Jesuit, of all things. He had a barren existence in the society. But he has glorious, glorious poetry. And I recommend to you, if you do not know it, go look up a poem entitled God's Grandeur. God's Grandeur. The first line is that glorious acclamation. The world is charged with the grandeur of God. It'd be worth your time.